Good morning, Shavua Tov. There's a very famous midrash in this week's parsha. Rav Huna Amar B'Shem Bar Kappara, Bishvil Arba Devarim Nigalu Yisrael Mitzrayim. In the script of four different matters, four things, Klal Yisrael were redeemed from Mitzrayim. Shalashanu et Sheman, they didn't change their names, et Lashonam, or their language, V'la Amru Lashon Hara, they didn't speak Lashon Hara, V'la Nimsa B'nehem Echad Mehem Peres Erva. There was no one who was steeped in Arias. Now, this midrash is often quoted, misquoted, as an expression, known, very famous to us, that in the schus, the merit of the fact that Klal Yisrael didn't change their names, their language, or their clothing, they were zocheh to be redeemed from Mitzrayim. That's not a chazal, it's a distortion, a change that's crept in over the years. One of the earliest recordings of that particular expression is perhaps in the Abarbanel, commentary on the Haggadah. But it's quoted by many Gedolim. Chasam Sofer quotes this expression, and it's certainly nowadays part of our regular vernacular. Let's just focus on the expression for a second. So b'schut, the fact that Klal Yisrael didn't change their names, the language, or their clothing, they were zocheh to be redeemed from Mitzrayim. Names. Now, we've already talked about names. We talked about it a few weeks ago. There's another midrash that says that calls man Adam Marbe B'mitzvus who kona shem tov la'atzmo. He acquires a name for himself. And a person acquires three names for themselves. Or the person has three names, I should say. Echad mashakorim lo aviv v'mo, the name that his parents give him. Echad mashakorim lo b'nei Adam, the name that his chavirim, the people, call him. Echad mashakona lo la'atzmo, the one that he acquires for himself. And the best of those is the name that he acquires for himself. When we spoke before, a few weeks ago, we talked about the Keter, the Katarim, the Kelim in the base of Mikdash, and the fact how there were three different crowns of leadership, Keneged that are, the Maral explained the different, Keneged the different Kelim in the base of Mikdash, and the most important crown, the Keter, Keter Shem Tov Olal Gavehem, and that was the Keter that's the Kli, the menorah, that doesn't have a Zer, doesn't have a limiting factor on it. So a name, Parsha Shemos, a name that someone acquires for themselves, that's what's going to keep their identity strong. The second, they didn't change their language. Now, it's interesting, we just finished recently celebrating Hanukkah. Hanukkah was the victory over the Greeks, the victory of the Hellenists. What was Hellenism? Hellenism was an infusion of Greek values into the cultures that had been conquered and brought into the Greek rule. And many Jews, large numbers, began to combine different elements of Jewish tradition with Greek culture. Those were the Hellenists. Now, they sought to seduce traditional Jews away from their way of life and convert them to the Greek way of thinking. We celebrate our victory over that. We also recently commemorated one of the greatest tragedies that happened to Klal Yisrael, in the Asar B'Tebes, in the Fast of Tebes. One of the tragedies we commemorate is the translation of the Torah into Greek. That was something that happened on the 8th of Tebes. We fast forward on the 10th. Now the question is, what's so terrible about that? This, an art school Chumash, translated into English and countless other languages, the entire art school publishing empire, translating Torah, Nach, Gemaras, Mishnah, Midrashim, it's all translated into English, modern Hebrew, whichever other language, many languages. What was so tragic about translating the Torah into Greek? So tragic that we still commemorate it today with a fast. On a simple level, the tragedy is that translating the Torah to Greek not only made the Torah accessible to the non-Jewish world, but it also taught the Jews Greek, and therefore exposed them more readily to Jewish culture and ideas. Slightly deeper, we know there are many different facets to the Torah, many different explanations, shivim panim la Torah. And translating from Lashon HaKodesh into another language limits the potential interpretations, restricting our understandings. So you find some people who think Pshat in Chumash is the art school translation, or the Pershat, that is the Pshat. It's not the Pshat. That's a Pshat. There are Shivim Panim LaTorah. Probing deeper still, we see there are far, far, far more reaching consequences. Language is one of the things that sets mankind completely apart from any other Bria in creation. The ability to convey complex thoughts and emotions from one to the other, to communicate strategy, and to develop meaningful relationships are only some of the major benefits of language. And that's just verbal communication. The invention of the alphabet, writing, that enables communication to transcend time, ideas to surpass human lifespan, and to ensure the immortality of many ideas. There's also a growing body of evidence that language not just affects the way we communicate, but it affects the way we think. When you give someone a series of pictures, a story, you often get children's exercise, you give them a picture or story, and you ask them to arrange the pictures in the sequence of the story. So an English-speaking person will arrange them in temporal order from left to right. A Hebrew-speaking person will arrange them in temporal order from right to left. But if you were to go, for example, to some of the Aboriginal tribes, for example, the Pampero in Australia, who think of time in terms of from east to west, then the order they lay the pictures out would depend on which direction they're facing. If they're facing east, the first picture is placed directly in front of him, but furthest from where he's sitting. The last picture is placed in front of him and next to him, so it goes from east to west. If he's facing west, then the first picture will be placed immediately in front of him, and the second one in front of that, the third in front of that, and the furthest away in temporal progression would be the furthest to the west. Also, the whole culture there relates to geography and the compass. You tell someone there's an insect on them, you tell you, hey, careful, there's a cockroach on your southwest leg. Affects the way you think. Language also affects the way, I'll give you another example. In English, when we speak, we mark a verb for tense. In French, you add gender. In Moshe Kodesh too. In Russian, you need to note whether or not the event was completed. In Turkish, the verb would include how you acquired the information. Did you see it yourself, or did we read about it, or did you hear about it from someone else? Language can also affect causality. Speak to any couple, married from international couple, native languages, different languages. Simple things like, is a verb used in an active or a passive form? So-and-so broke the vase, or the vase was broken. It can affect what you remember, who caused something to happen. So if people learn another language, they learn a new way to think. And when bilingual people switch from one language to another, they start thinking differently. So let's now go back to the translation of the Torah into Greek. Lashon HaKodesh is written from right to left. In a Torah scroll, there's no vowels, there's no punctuation, and the only way to tell the meaning of a word or a sentence is from the context, or because there's a Masorah, an accompanying oral tradition. Greek, on the other hand, reads from left to right. The words have written vowels, and what is written is what says. The Greek way of thinking is very different from our way of thinking. And the Greek way of thinking is what's behind the thought process of the Western world. So some questions we might want to consider are, how much is our different ways of thinking a function of language? If our way of thinking is indeed a function of language, once the Torah was translated into Greek, it was that translation that formed the basis of the whole Western civilization's understanding of religion. And the whole subsequent development of religion and faith was based on the thought processes with the thought from that translation, and the thinking process now from left to right, not from life. A thinking process foreign to Torah. The ramifications of that are enormous. When you encounter now a clash between a Western civilization and a Western thought and religious thought, then there may not be a genuine clash. It could just be that that's based on a misunderstanding because there was a wrongly translated, so therefore it was a wrongly translated thought and is based on a wrongly understood translation of the original source. Third thing that we should be aware of and think of consequence is how important it is for us to know Lashon HaKodesh and to be able to understand our holy text in their original form, because anything less cannot be a true understanding. A third thing that we should understand, a lesson for us, is it's important for us to be able to understand our holy texts in their original Lashon HaKodesh, because anything less cannot lead to a true understanding. Third, clothing. Why do we wear clothes at all? Animals don't wear clothes. Babies don't wear clothes. It's okay for them. Okay, let's take a step back. We wear clothes for modesty. We wear clothes to protect from the elements. There's more to it. An animal, a behemoth. We're speaking about Lashon HaKodesh, right? Ba-ma, behemoth, ba-ma. In it is what it is. What you see is what you get. The body expresses the sum totality. Also, the baby, there's no hidden depth. Right? The body expresses the totality there. With an adult, a person who's intelligent, they've got a divine neshama. Therefore, the image is not based on the body. You cover it up. You cover it up with clothing. We could ask, why don't we simply recognize people need to be judged based on what's inside? Or we could point out that Adam and Chava didn't need to wear clothes and they didn't view each other as animals. Why doesn't the simple knowledge that there's more on the inside suffice? The answer to that goes back to why do people start wearing clothes? Go back to Chet HaRishon, Chet of Adam and Chava. The effect of the snake's persuasion to eat from the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash enticed Chava and then Adam to eat from this Eitz Hadas. They were cursed, they were driven out of Gan Eden. Before the Chet, the Eitz Hara was external. Afterwards, the Nachash Eitz Hara became internal, became part of man. Now, he needs to fight with something inside himself. There's an internal Yetzirah. A deeper understanding that the Nachash is this Yetzirah. How is he able to seduce Chava and Adam? By taking reality and turning it into fantasy. It denied that Hashem had told Adam and Chava that they could eat from any tree in the garden. Just not the tree of good and evil. Chava pointed out that Hashem had warned them of their mortality. The Nachash denied that as well. Before the Chet, thought had two components. It had the Seichel and the Dimyon. The Seichel, the intellect, logic, reason, analysis, process, and the Dimyon, imagination. Balance is different for different people, and for the same person, different in different areas. But at all times, in the ideal world, the Seichel would remain in control. Now, the world of the Dimyon has internalized, has become part of mankind. Once created, the fantasy attracted Chava's and then Adam's desires. And then man's nature changed. The imagination fled control of the Seichel, and man became a victim of his fantasies. Practical example, think of contemporary advertising. You know, is this the real life? Is it just fantasy? The Marlboro Man, Rolex watches. What image is impacted? That's the Dimyon, it's the imagination. So regarding human body, we imagine that it has exotic properties. And instead of the body being a garb for the soul, it becomes a distraction. Out of control of the Seichel, our minds then fantasize. What's the solution? Cover it up, and we cover up with clothing. Now you might think that if you're going to cover up, clothing should be drab and dreary. No! Once you're going to use the imagination, you can use it. Right? But use it to have a positive impact. If you dress in a particular way, collared shirt, a serious frame of mind. Denim shirt, carefree, relaxed. There are many mitzvahs in the Torah involving clothing. If you think about it, the Big Day Kahuna, the Chavod of the Tiferes, for honor, for glory. What was the purpose of the Big Day Kahuna? What's the message behind them? The answer is that the garments have an effect on both the people who see a person dressed in a particular way and on the person who's wearing them themselves. A waiter dressed up, black tie, white gloves, serving, has a presence. It's mechabed, the person they're serving, but it also affects how the waiter themselves view themselves and how they behave. So in Mishraim, Klal Yisrael, they didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their clothing. An observation. Just before Klal Yisrael were taken out of Mitzrayim, they were on the 49th level of Tuma. Two conclusions. Despite the fact they were on the 49th level of Tuma, they retained a vestige of their identity. They didn't change their names, language, or clothing. They didn't speak Lashon Hara. They didn't get involved in illicit relations. They had a Jewish identity. There was still that vestige of identity, no matter how low they sunk. That identity remained as part of them. Think of the corollary. Someone can have a Jewish name. They can speak Jewish language. And from the outside, they can look Jewish. But they can still be holding on the 49th level of Tuma. Now, one of the things we see from Mitzrayim and Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim, everything we've said so far, is that environment can profoundly impact on us and what our values are. Each set of circumstances influences our midos differently and includes the ideas that come out stem from those midos. The Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Deos, towards the beginning of Hilchos Deos, Perek Shesh, Perek Vav, Derech b'yoso shel Adam liot nimshach b'daito b'masav achar reav. It's a natural tendency of man to be influenced in his ideas, his contact by his fellows. The Chiddushim taught this lesson the first day he entered the new Gur Beis Midrash. He quoted the Gemara in Brachos, Taf Chafes Amad Aleph. Says that on that day they removed the Shomer from the Petach, from the entrance of the Beis Midrash, and they gave reshus to all the Talmidim to enter. Why? Because Rabbi Gamliel had previously announced, "Kol Talmidim she'ein tocho kavaru lo yikanes the Beis Midrash." Anyone who's inside and outside, they didn't match. Their interior and their exterior didn't match. They weren't allowed to come into the Beis Midrash. Only if you were able to have your interior and exterior matching, were you able to learn in the Beis Midrash. So on the day he stepped down, they removed the Shomer from the Beis Midrash. And what happened? They added many benches into the Beis Midrash. Loads more Talmidim came to learn. Rabban Gamliel was concerned, right? Perhaps, Chas v'Shalom, he'd held back Torah from Klal Yisrael. Why was he concerned? What caused him to be concerned? Rashi explains that Rabban Gamliel was worried that perhaps he deserved punishment for preventing all those students from coming to the base in his days. Kedush Yerim brings another explanation. He says, what did Rabban Gamliel understand now that he didn't understand before? What caused him to worry and retract from his original position of not allowing students to come into the base? He answers that when these students whose insides did not match their outsides came to the Beis HaMidrash, the influence of the Beis HaMidrash was so powerful that it immediately transformed them into students whose insides matched their outsides. The environment had an immediate impact. Rabban Gamliel sensed that, and he felt sorry having prevented them from coming into the Beis HaMidrash in the past. Had he let them in, it would have positively influenced them. Let's come back to Parsha Shmos. Moshe Rabbeinu. Who was Moshe Rabbeinu? He grew up Beis Paro. He was a prince of Egypt. Yet he knew he was an Israelite, a Hebrew. What does the Pasuk say? V'yehi b'yomim mehem, v'yigdal Moshe. It was in those days that Moshe grew up. V'yetzel achav, he went out to his brothers, v'yar b'si b'sam, and he saw their pain. V'yar ish mitzri macha ish ivri. He saw an Egyptian hitting an ivri, mechav, from amongst his brothers. V'yifen kol v'cho, he looked this way and that. V'yarki ein ish, he saw there was no one watching. V'yachet a mitzri v'yitmunu b'cho. He hit the Egyptian and he buried him in the sand. Poshet p'shat. Moshe Rabbeinu comes out. He looks around. He sees an Egyptian hitting a Jew. He sees no one's watching. He takes action. A different understanding. And if anyone knows the Makor for this, I heard this many years ago when I was a student in yeshiva. If anyone knows, see this inside, I'd love to see it. It's a bit of a Hasidic understanding. For Yehi b'yomi mahem, it was in those days, v'yigdal Moshe. Moshe grew up. V'yetzel achav, and he went out and he saw his brothers. V'yar b'sivu san, he saw what's happening to the Hebrews. V'yar ish mitzri, and he saw an Egyptian macha ish ivri. And he saw an Egyptian hitting one of his brothers. And he turned this way and that internally, and he saw a prince of Egypt, and he saw a Hebrew, and he saw a conflict. And he saw there was no person. And at that point, he smote the Egyptian inside. and he buried him in Bechal. Then the next pasuk, Vayetzi b'yomashen, he goes out. There's an assumption of responsibility. So the questions I'd like to leave you with this week are, how do my present circumstances impact me? What are some ways that I can use the power of my environment to my benefit? And to reconsider the question we asked last week, at the beginning of the week, what do the experiences that we're going through right now enable me to do that I could not otherwise have done? Thank you.